सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। So dear Atmajnanandaji and the devotees, for this retreat I have chosen to discuss one of the most important hymns from the Vedas, which is recited by thousands of people on daily basis, and also it is an integral part of many worships that are conducted. Almost all worships are accompanied by the two very well-known hymns. Actually, many look upon these two hymns as a set, as companion hymns, Purusha Suktam and Narayana Suktam. So, of these, Purusha Suktam, it also, like Narayana Suktam, takes up the idea of there being one single being, and that being is, although one, expressing itself in varieties of different ways without losing its oneness. In Purusha Suktam, the immanence of this one being is more emphasized. In Narayana Suktam, it is the transcendence of that being that is predominantly stated. Narayana Suktam is therefore a meditation on that Purusha. To feel that Purusha within us as this central identity by going beyond the appearances. This is very akin to what Sri Ramakrishna used to say, that it is anulom vilom, or like transcendence and immanence, you climb the stairs to go to the roof. That is a beautiful analogy he gives. You start climbing the stairs and you go to the, say, first floor and tell, no, no, this is not the roof. I have to go up further. So transcend that floor, go up further, go to the second floor, examine and say, no, no, this again is not the roof. I need to go up further. Go to the third floor. Again you see, well, there are the rooms and everything looks kind of covered. And so this also cannot be the roof. And so you climb further up. And in this process, ultimately, you get to the roof. Now, after getting onto the roof, while you are seeing the expanse, infinite expanse of the sky around, you also then see that this roof is made of the same materials. The staircase is the same material as the roof is. And the whole building is really made of the similar things, same materials. And so it is all really one. So, first we went by the process of transcendence. And then see the immanence, that it is the one reality that is everywhere. So, these both processes, they have to go hand in hand. The transcendence and immanence. The idea of having, you know, perception of this one reality is expressed right in the what is called Shanti Mantra, the peace chant for this hymn. And this is in Taittiriya Aranyaka. Actually, Purusha Suktam and parts of Narayan Suktam with different variations appear in all different Vedas, different Upanishads and such literature. The version that we shall be discussing today is taken from the Taittiriya Aranyaka. It comes predominantly in Mahanarayan Upanishad, and there are some parts which actually do not come in Mahanarayan Upanishad, but other parts of the Taittiriya Aranyaka. All this gets combined together to what is called Narayana Suktam. And it begins with this Shanti Mantra, this peace chant, that Sahana Vavatu. A step to feel oneness is to feel togetherness. Togetherness takes us, you know, step by step to oneness. Before feeling oneness, it is kind of a big leap for most of us. So let us feel togetherness first. So Sahana Vavatu, let both of us be protected together. Although it mentions both, it is, and traditionally it is referred to as the student and the teacher, we two, the student and the teacher. Although the actual hymn does not say teacher and student, so we can actually generalize it for our purpose, that all where I see I and the world, I and you. Now, let us feel this togetherness, I and world. Our existence is together. And so let us pray for the protection of this together. This is the prayer. When is the prayer necessary? That which is going to happen automatically, do we need to pray? We don't need to pray. Do we need to pray, may there be Sunday tomorrow? By the very fact that today is Saturday, even if we don't do any prayers, tomorrow has to be Sunday. For that we don't need to do the prayer. Prayer is necessary where automatically the things may go, or more likely to go in the reverse direction, in the direction that we don't want it to go. So we pray that, pray that I may not have any disease. Because the diseases are rampant around, so I may not fall sick. You pray for that, because sickness comes. So we have to pray, may there be no sickness for me. So this tendency is there for protection of I at the cost of all. Whether all others are protected or not, I don't care. Let them go to dogs. It is, let me be protected. That is a natural tendency. To counter that, therefore this prayer is there. Let us be protected together. Let us be nourished together. Same idea. Not I alone should get nourishment. Let everybody, let us be nourished together. Then, let us attain strength together. Sahaviryam karavavahai. And then comes a very important thing, that whatever we are studying, let that be, let that shine forth in our life. Let that not be just caught in our intellect. Let us not think that, well, let me just understand it, and so that I will be able to write a book on it or give a lecture about it. No, it is in every act of our life that knowledge must shine. Our knowledge is only as much as we can really express in our life. That is the true knowledge. And this is what the great American transcendentalist Thoreau mentions in the Walden Pond, that it is what we actually really know is not what we can write in books, but what we can actually express in our life. Our knowledge is that much alone. So we may talk about big things, but our knowledge is actually only that much which we can express in our actions. So this prayer is for that. Let what I study be not limited to my intellectual understanding, but let it be expressed. Let it become a living experience for me. So tejasvina vadhitamastu, that let it shine forth in my action. So, and then ma vidvishavahai, may there be no hatred amongst us. Which hatred comes naturally. Do we need to pray, may there be hatred? It comes, and we need that to, you know, ward it off. So therefore this prayer, may there be no hatred amongst us. So with this prayerful attitude, we have to study these scriptures. And Narayan Suktam, let us study today with this attitude of togetherness, which leads to oneness. It is together for all our limbs, you know, when they are together, then we see this as one person. If these limbs are, you know, scattered all around, we will not see this as one person. They have to be strung together, brought together in a coherent manner, in a cooperative way, you know. See how all our organs, all parts of the body, they act in unison. It is what I see and what I touch and what I, you know, react, all are strung together in our mind. Thus it becomes one being. So this whole universe, everything in this is to be strung together so that it then can be seen as one whole unbroken being. So with this, this hymn begins. Sahasrashirsham Devam Vishvaksham Vishvashambhuvam Vishvam Narayanam Devam Aksharam Paramam Padam. Sahasrashirsham. This has direct reference to Purusha Sukta, which says Sahasrashirsha Purushah Sahasraksha Sahasrapat, that it is here it is called Devam, which does not come in that part of Purusha Suktam. Devam means that which is shining. It is luminous. All that shines is actually that shine is from that one luminous being. We know that, we chant that in Sri Ramakrishna Zarati, that Jyotira Jyoti Ujjalari Dikandar, that you are the light of all lights. All that shines is just reflecting that shine. Yesterday we were having a little funny discussion with our friends that we recently had put a few months back solar panels there. And I told, you know, I saw a funny thing that even the moonlight activates them and it generates some power. A little, but still it does, basically. Even the moonlight. So can we call it just solar panel or something? They are solar panel during the day and lunar panels during... but then somebody corrected. No, moon only reflects the sunlight. So therefore they are still solar panels. It is, moon doesn't have its own light. So it is the light of the sun that is generating in an indirect way, that's all. So they are still solar panels. So whatever light we see, whatever we perceive really is the light of that one being, Devam. And it is manifesting itself in through all the different heads. Sahasra means thousand heads. Now, it is not thousand as just a number exactly, that it is not 999 or 1001. It means infinite. Whatever heads you see, they are heads of that being. This is an idea which is quite counterintuitive for most of us. In fact, for almost all of us, that we see that there are all different beings. Like this being, I say, this is Yogatmananda's head, that is there Atmajnanananda's head. We are not same, you know, it is, this is my head, that is his head, this is Rina's head and so forth, you know. So all we see as different beings, each having its own head. And that we feel makes sense. But this suktam, and that is the idea in various different Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita and Purusha Suktam, that all these heads really belong to one being. That being thinks through all heads. Can you believe that? Difficult to believe, difficult to accept that, no, I am such a wise person, my head works so well. That's stupid. How can, you know, I will not use that head to think. It is, we feel that we have all different heads. But that is because we are attached to body. Because we are attached to body, we feel the reality within. Just because the bodies are different, the reality within also we feel has to be different. The difference in the appearance is superimposed on the reality, which doesn't have any distinctions or differentiations. For example, the water in this glass, you may just go and fill your glasses if you have or whatever glasses you may find with the water. Now, of course, the glasses are different. But water is the same. It is whether you sip from this glass or that glass, it doesn't really matter. And after all, the important thing is water and not glass. Do we drink glass? No, the water is kept, you know, just to hold the water, you have this glass. But what is actually important thing there is the water. So just imagine, you know, we are all different bottles. And the head is a part of that bottle. And so one water, one substance, one being is filled in all these different bottles. This is, friend, just the analogy. It is actually, this truth is far more intense than this analogy. The oneness is really, really intense there. No distinction can be shown in the being. The appearances alone become different. And so this says that one being has all the heads. Another way to try to understand it is that just as the one person, we can think of this, because this connects to our experience very directly, that same Yogatmananda sees from the left eye as well as from the right eye. Do we feel that no, only from left eye and not from the right eye, provided of course both eyes are functional? It is under that condition. Well, yes, the same person sees through the two eyes, breathes through both the nostrils, if one is not choked. It is, both the nostrils are mine. I work with both the hands, not that Yogatmananda works by left hand and his right hand is used by Atmajnanananda. Not like that. It is. So just as one being can use the two hands, these two eyes, the two nostrils, and we can take it further. All the many, many muscles that are in the body, the same one being is using them. Now, therefore, think that all these different heads, different limbs, the different organs, they are really used by the one being. The reason for understanding this, clearly is to see that as we go deeper, the distinctions start just vanishing. When we reach that the reality, we see that it is beyond all distinctions. There cannot be distinctness there. And therefore, we can easily appreciate this truth that the same one being is thinking through all heads. All heads really belong to that one being. And Vishwaksham, same idea, that all eyes, all that is being seen, or eyes really, they symbolically represent all our organs of perception, our sensory organs. All of them are really being used by the same one being. There are no different beings. This is just as I was telling about thinking. The eyes also, one being is perceiving through all different eyes, is breathing through all different lungs, is getting the touch sense from all different such organs. And thus we see, this is told here, that this whole universe is really, and there this word comes, Vishwam Narayanam Devam Aksharam Paramam Padam. That in some versions, the one that is in Mahanarayan Upanishad, the last word Padam, instead of that there is the word Prabhum. Anyway, both these are correct. It is Vishwam Narayanam, this whole universe. Vishwa means that which is pervaded everywhere, that which is the existence, Vishwa. And it is, what is it? Narayanam. That is this God, Narayana. The Narayana is has quite a few very interesting meanings. We all know that Narayana is one way of, you know, calling on God, Narayana. But its etymology is very interesting. One way of looking at it is that Narayana comes from this Nara. Nara means human being. The controller, governor of all human beings, that is Narayana. That God who is the Lord of all human beings. And it is the human beings also of other beings, but since this hymn is being made for recital of human beings are mentioned here. The Nara means human beings. So, if this is written for cows and all others, those also would get included, but it is mainly meant for, or exclusively meant for human beings. So, Lord of all human beings. It is the Lordship is again a very comprehensive thing. We all have our little lordships, but it is a reflection of that Lordship. We all feel a sense of being Lord in ourselves, that yes, I can do this, I can do that, I will decide what is to be done, I do not want somebody else to dictate me. These are all signs of Lordship. Even little children have that, want to be independent. Let me do it myself. No, I don't book any interference. I like to be independent. I am Lord. Actually, this Lordship is a reflection of the true Lordship. We all, as I was mentioning, reflect the light of the Lord. We also reflect the rulership of the Lord. And since it is just reflection, it doesn't stand the test of reality. We say that we are Lord, what our Lordship, any little circumstance is enough to shatter that myth. I govern everything. What do I govern? Nothing really. One doctor, she is my dentist, so she was telling that how she is Indian, studied in Mumbai. And so, she was telling me how she happened to become a dentist. She had lot of interest in art and paintings and such things. She wanted to go to arts college. Her mother was thinking, no, you are very good with science. So you should take up science subjects, you can become a doctor, that will be very good for you. And so they were going in a taxi to the two colleges there. One college, that is arts college, and the other science college. Now, what happened was, in India you drive by the left hand side, so it is, as the taxi was going, there was the red light came. Now you can take the left turn, just as here you can take the right turn if possible, even if you get the red light. I heard that earlier they used to, where they didn't want people to take right turn at red, they used to put the sign, no right turn on red. Now those signs are removed and only thing written on them is no turn on red. because somebody is thinking that it is right turn is prohibited, took a left turn. So it is. So it is. So what happened here was, since there was the now red light, the mother told the taxi, okay, take left. And then there was the science college. So they said, let us. And then the mother insisted, because they went to science college and it is all good. And then mother said, why now go that day while doing all the work in the science college, seeing everything, the time to see the arts college was anyway over. So why come again next day? Come on, take this. This is very good. So she said that I became doctor because of that red light. May had there been green light, probably, you know, we would have gone straight and got admission in the arts college. But what happened was the red light was there. I couldn't go straight. So mother said, okay, take left. And then there was the science college. And so she became doctor like that. So what I mean is, how strong is our lordship? We may decide one thing that I will do this. Is it always possible for us to do that? So many different factors, unknown to us, ungoverned by us, come and topple everything. It is like if I am sitting in the flight from Providence, I came, landed in DCA this morning. So now the plane is flying towards south from Providence. It is going south. Even if I start walking in the plane towards north, does it make any difference? It doesn't change where I am going to land, you see. My walking in the northern direction is not going to be of much significance there. So, it is like this. We have our lordship, but it is governed by the overlord. And what is our lordship? When it conquers with the Lord, then only it works. Therefore, we say man proposes and go, yeah, exactly. So, our propose, even if we don't propose, that is what is going to happen, you know. So, this lordship of ours is really a reflection of that Supreme Lord, that Narayana. It is. And it, how is that its lordship is permanent? Aksharam. And that being also is permanent, unchanging. There is no change there. This is a unique thing. In the world, everything is changing. In fact, what we perceive through our senses and mind is only change. Only change is perceived. When I am seeing you, it is only the change that is being perceived. Unchanging cannot be perceived by the senses. And yet, we are sure that there is something unchanging. Because even to perceive change, we need something that is unchanging. It is by contrast alone between this that we can perceive the change. There, like we perceive a movie on a screen. The screen doesn't move. If the screen also is moving, it will be difficult to watch a movie. It is something has to be stable, unchanging, even for perceiving something that is changing. It is this unchanging is this Lord Narayana is unchanging. And we can see, we can all understand, one thing that we do perceive, which is unchanging. But we do not perceive it through any sense organ. And that is, everybody perceives it. In fact, that is the basis of all our other perceptions. And what is that? The perception of I. That is, that doesn't change. I remain the same. The body keeps on changing. 2 months old, and then, say, maybe 95 years old. You feel the same being, that yes, you know, I looked like that when I was 2 months old. Can you believe? Well, now the 95-year-old and 2-month-old, physically hardly any similarity can be pointed out. But yet, you know that that is my picture, you know. I was looking like that when I was 2 months old. So, it is unchanging. On the basis of that unchanging, we conduct all our activities. Our day-to-day activities also will be impossible if we do not hold on to this unchanging in the midst of all changes. If everything is changing and nothing is unchanging, well, could I come today to give the retreat? It was a few months ago, is it not, that we decided that we will have this retreat? It was decided some months back. Everything changed then, but I still know that yes, I had committed that yes, this I will come for this retreat and enjoy the wonderful company of the Swamis and devotees here. I remember that, that continuity of I is there. The one who said that I will come, a different person hasn't come. Even if you try to convince me, I will just laugh, you know. No, no, the same person who said I will come has come. Although, well, things change, but yet something didn't change. It is, that is how our day-to-day activities also are possible, only because of this very firm conviction that there is something unchanging in the midst of all changes. Without this perception of unchanging, even our day-to-day mundane life would be impossible. Just imagine, if we do not adhere to this unchanging, will there be any meaning to truth? Truth is something, you know, that irrespective of the changes of the situation, you hold on to. Suppose I ask you, somebody here, that will you give me $100 now? I am in dire need, you know. I will return it tomorrow, and you give it to me. And then, but tell me that, tomorrow please return it to me. I also need money. Don't forget. And then tomorrow dawns and you come to me and say, I hope you remember. What remember? That $100 that you were to return today, who took it? If everything is in flux, you know. If everything is changing, where is the question of permanent and holding on to and truth? Our whole individual, family and social life, even at the mundane level, will collapse, let alone spiritual. I mean just the day-to-day mundane living also depends on this very strong, irrefutable conviction that there is something unchanging. And so this unchanging, what is it? God, the Self, which is same in all of us. That alone is unchanging. everything else changes. So aksharam, paramam padam, the supreme destination. Padam is gamaniyam, gantavyam, that which is to be attained in life, the ultimate goal. That is the padam, that is the supreme goal in life, supreme destination. The meaning supreme here, why the word paramam is used, is that there are some secondary objectives in life, like let me become a millionaire or billionaire, or let me get more PhDs, let me do this and that, let me have a bigger house, or a bigger car, or whatever. They are all the intermediate or secondary objectives. They are not the supreme objective or supreme goal, because even when we get it, we do not have a sense of fulfillment, the sense that, well, that's enough, now I don't want anything. In fact, then comes the question, what next after that? It is, okay, my objective was to get a very suitable partner for me in life. I got this boy or this girl, now I got married. Am I fulfilled? Now question, what next? It is how to keep each other happy and together, you know, that is a challenge again. So it is, go on, you know. One man was telling, we had a yoga conference, and he was saying, well, I am telling about yoga here to you, but let me tell my condition. I am a businessman trying, you know, running about and somehow trying to hold on to an 8-year-old marriage and so forth, you know. So it is, you attain to that objective, but not that everything is fulfilled now. Again, next challenges are there. What next in life? What next we want to do? That comes forth. There is no satisfaction in any of these, and therefore none of them can be paramam padam. They can be secondary padam, you know. So it is, and you are driving somewhere, and then you need to go to bathroom, and so you stop somewhere. Now you stop there for a temporary purpose. That was not the destination. You do not just stay there all the time. Then after going to bathroom, you again get into your car and start driving, you know. So similarly, all these other destinations are like that. They are bathroom breaks on our on our journey. So it is like, okay, I did my high school, that was one bathroom break. Then it is I got my bachelor's degree, another bathroom break. It is like that long journey, so you may have to take many of them. So it is like that, but they are not destinations. Paramam padam is that getting which nothing more is required. Yam labdhva cha aparam labham manyate nadhikam tatah. Bhagavad Gita mentions about this, that getting which nothing else, nothing more seems to be now worth having. You are fulfilled, and in that state, even if the circumstances become terribly, miserable, still this person is full of bliss. There is no change in that situation. Yasmin sthito na dukkhena gurunapi vichalyate. Gurunapi dukkhena na vichalyate. When one gets established in this state, in this paramam padam, then the circumstances do not matter at all. It is like Sri Ramakrishna. Think of it, you know, that all these descriptions can be easily seen, personified in Sri Ramakrishna. What terrible pain he must have been having in that time of that throat cancer. And yet he was scattering bliss all around. Because that those circumstances, you can imagine, you know, those were not the days of the now modern painkillers and all that available, that morphine, that it is not there. Now imagine that kind of pain somebody may have, and yet he was in tremendous bliss all the time. Can you think of that? It is this example, yasmin sthitona dukhena guruna api vichalyate. Nothing more is needed. It is the state of total intrinsic bliss. I am telling intrinsic because our idea of bliss is getting something from outside, dependent on somebody else. It is therefore not intrinsic and therefore not bliss either. It is just an appearance of bliss. It comes and goes. It is sometimes therefore characterized as a state between two sufferings. It's called happiness here. It is not really happiness at all. It is not a state of total satisfaction. So, but paramam padam, when one realizes the supreme goal, the ultimate destination, there is no even theoretical possibility of anything beyond. For everything is this being now. I am everything. What can be added to that? I am that oneness. There is nothing left to be added to it. That's it. There is no possibility of anything more than that there. And that is why this is the actual paramam padam. Other objectives could be, you know, dependent on person's choice, a person's likings, like that doctor I told. Her choice could be this and this. Somebody may say, well, I like Starbucks. Somebody may say, no, I like Dunkin' Donut. Okay, it is a matter of choice. But this paramam padam is not matter of choice. That is for everybody. It is not decided by an individual. The individual goals, which are secondary goals, they can be decided by individuals, whether I want to do this job or that job. And since they are again subservient to this paramam padam, your individual wish may come true or may not come true. I have many examples like that lady, how she became doctor. I know, and you also must be knowing that there are so many such examples where you thought, let me do this, but something else. You ended up doing something else. In fact, everybody, if we look at our past lives, we can see this, that while I thought that I am taking my decisions, something else, somebody else was monitoring them, changing them, and arranging the circumstances conducive to that, which I never dreamt also. It is how suddenly you meet somebody and that changes the course of your life. How something happened to you and things became different for you. Neither that meeting with somebody nor that happening that you had decided on, it was beyond your power, but that changed the course of your life. So that is this paramam padam, our ultimate destination. is not an individually decided thing, I will go or I will not go. You have to, today or tomorrow, willy-nilly, whether you agree or you don't agree, you have to go. God is our destination. Narayana is our supreme destination. It is not a matter of choice. Therefore, Shankaracharya calls it Vastu Tantra. Means it is decided by the nature of the reality. In his commentary on Brahma Sutra and also in other commentaries, you will find he speaks about Purusha Tantra and Vastu Tantra. A beautiful idea that Purusha Tantra means certain things that I feel dependent on me. I will do as I wish. That yes, I have to sell my house. I will decide what price I need to sell. Whether to sell or not to sell, I will think about it. Whether to sell at this price or that price, I will think about it. My friend wants it, I can give that friend for half price or without taking anything. That is up to me, means I cannot be dictated in that matter. It is my house, I will decide when, whom, if at all, to be sold. So it is called Purusha Tantra, that it is dependent on that individual, at least to some extent. But Vastu Tantra, that is not dependent on a person, not on that person's choice or perception. That is, the nature of the things is like that. So, this, our ultimate goal is not subject to be decided by personal choice. It is the ultimate goal of Nara, everyone. That is another etymology of this word Narayana. Narena Ayanam Iti. That it is the destination, the goal of everyone. Narayana is that God. The name Narayana suggests that is the goal of everyone. Every being has to get there. There is no choice. Even in spite of resistance, we have to get there. It is not possible for anything else to satisfy us. And therefore, for satisfaction, whether we want or not, we have to go to God. There is no other choice at all. This is to be felt, friends, that we may decide to run away from God, but we cannot run away from God. God is our very reality, our very being. You know, like in a movie, you can see that one person said bye-bye to another person, got into car and is moving from away from that person. And that other person also got in his car and started moving in the opposite direction. Now both these cars, they are going away from each other. Can they go away from screen? No choice for them. It is a movie being shown on the screen. So that is their destination. It doesn't depend that how fast you run or how slow you go. It is God is our reality. Whether we say I don't agree with God, we have no choice. A nice thing happened, you know. One little boy got angry with, he had come to our children's camp and got angry with his mom. Children, you know, it happens that probably she didn't give him ice cream or whatever. So So he said, you are a terrible mom. You are worst mom. And the wise mother, smiling, he said, well, do you have a choice? There is no choice there. Do you have a choice? I like the way the mother solved the issue. Quickly the things, you know, that anger and all was stopped there. Do you have a choice? It is, even if I am bad mother, you don't have, you are my child, what can you do, you said. So it is. Similarly, God is our very own. We cannot run away from God. That is for sure. We can run away from each other. We may even say that I have decided to become an atheist. There is no God. I can prove that there is no God. Even the proving that there is no God, the very fact that I am trying to prove presumes God. That on the basis of that God alone I can prove that there is no God. It is, there is no possibility for us to run away from this. So, paramam padam vishvatah parama nityam. It is vishvatah, all throughout the universe, vishvatah. Compared to this universe, it is supreme. It is highest, the most noble. Whatever, see, each of us have an ingrained idea of the good, better, best. It is, again, one child was saying that, he said, this is my best friend. And this is my American way of, you know, everything becomes superlative here. So it is that other friend, he is my best friend. She is my best friend. He is my best friend. Said, well, how can you have so many best friends? So then he, next time he says to me, this is my bestest friend. What can be done now? My bestest friend. So it is. Vishvatah paramam. In the world, we say this is nice, this is good. All the ideas of best that we have, this Narayana is superior to that also. Paramam. It is the best thing that we can find. In fact, many say that God is actually supreme good. And at one extra O was not necessary, so good became God. So it is, the supreme good is God. So Narayana is that reality, the ultimate good, the best. It is so paramam and nityam. We have seen this, everything else kind of, you know, changes. And therefore is unreal. This is a somewhat debatable idea that Vedanta presents. At philosophical level, many debate this. That how do you say that the world is unreal? You can say that it is impermanent. And Vedanta says that yes, it is impermanent and therefore unreal. If you at all want to have this word unreal, the only way you can show the unreality of something is by showing its impermanence. That is how Buddha, and even prior to Buddha, many other philosophers, Buddha did it in a very emphatic manner. But this idea of impermanence that leads to the perception that it is unreal is there. That you see that it is impermanent, changing, and therefore reality is not its essence. Had it been real, it wouldn't have changed. So, it is, therefore, this is called nityam. This is there in and through everything. Narayana is there. So, we shall just complete this line and then we will open for question answers. It is Vishwam Narayanam Harim, and this whole universe is Narayana. And this is stated again and again in this hymn. Repetition here is not a fault, not a blemish, because it is for emphasis. That again and again it is imprinted on us that this is Narayana. Think of this, you know. This is for meditation. This whole hymn is for meditation. That everything that you we come in contact with, we may just say that this is Rina, this is Rita, and then all that, you know. So instead of that, let me think like this. This is Narayana appearing as Rina. Narayana appearing as Rita. Narayana appearing as this and this. Narayana appearing as microphone. Narayana appearing as the one who is speaking through the microphone. It is all Narayana. It is for emphasis. Again and again, let us imprint it strongly. It is like this, you know, when you keep on making a groove. When you repeat, now apparently you are doing the same action, but what happens? The groove becomes what? Permanent. What?
Permanent.
Yeah, it becomes deeper and deeper. So, exactly, thank you. So, it is, that is why the repetition is there. Let this understanding become deeper, that this is Narayana. This is Narayana appearing as microphone. Narayana appearing as this desk. Narayana appearing as this nice shrine and altar. Narayana appearing as even all the so-called dirty things. All that is really Narayana in various forms, that's all. So, and in this Narayana, Vishwamevedam Purusha, Purushastad Vishwam Upajivati, that we all breathe in Narayana. This whole universe exists in Narayana. Our very being is in Narayana. It is, we pulsate in Narayana. Our every vibration is in that. So, let us try to feel this and then I stop here. We shall continue the discussion in the next class. But till then, if you have any questions, you may not have, because I was giving such a nice discourse, is it not? So, therefore, there may not be any question at all. Oh, there are some. Oh. Why I requested questions in the written form is, well, you can judge that. When you are writing, you try to be precise, you know. You limit yourself to the choice words. When we are speaking, then we are not so mindful about it. And therefore, it becomes not a harmoniously presented thought. Asking the question verbally has its own merits, no doubt. But because of the paucity of time and the nature of the discussion, I requested that may the questions be written down. So thank you. Hari Om. What changes will we see manifest in ourselves as we it is kind of transition from I to we. Right, it is. As we go, we change from I to we. Yes. Enmity will be reduced. I and you. It is a war situation, really. It is. When it is we, then there is no war. It is. When we see that I and the others as separate, then the two things try to overpower each other. When we think of the like the citizens of this town, this Silver Spring, let us take it, then we may have conflict with other things, other towns, and also the authorities in the city may not always be, you know, happy with what the state thinks about them. So there is conflict. It is. But when it comes, you know, to the state of Maryland, then we all feel that togetherness. And we then become united to fight against, say, other state, Virginia. No, we are better. Those Virginia or like that. It is. Togetherness, then think of it, you know, all we 50 states together, then our internal differences are forgotten and we stand united to, say, some other country, some other challenge and so forth. So the togetherness with the whole universe therefore removes our enmity in us completely. And therefore, the person becomes more peaceful. It is one of the natural outcomes. Other thing that we can perceive, and these are perceptible things. Some are perceived by oneself. Some means internal perception, what is called in Sanskrit swasamvedya. Can be perceived only by oneself, not by somebody else. So there are some signs that can be perceived only by myself. But then there are other things, because what is in me gets expressed in my actions too, in my behavior too, and that gets perceived by others too. So this peace inside will express peace outside. Quarrels with others will reduce. I will not get irritated. Just as, you know, where we are together, we don't get irritated with each other. One very good example is, does your right hand get irritated by the behavior of your left hand? No, because there is the perception of together. You know, I have never seen that the right hand getting into dispute and quarrel with the left hand. It is your teeth may bite your tongue occasionally. It happens. But therefore, does somebody go and break the teeth? No, there is no irritation or quarrel where there is this oneness. So, when this person starts feeling oneness, that irritation, that jealousy and hatred goes away, that, I didn't get the job, somebody else got the job, then one reaction is, These days, these people, you know, they have connections. Therefore, they get an honest person like me doesn't get, and so forth, you know, irritation. But when you have this togetherness, then if not me, my friend got it. My friend got it. It is either of me, either I or that fellow would be getting it. It is my friend who got it. Fine. It is. That is what happens by that. The question is that, well, the job that I didn't get by getting irritated, was I going to get that job? No. Only thing is, I at least was able to protect my smile. Otherwise, the job is gone and the smile is gone. And now at least the job might be gone, but at least the smile is saved, you see. So, and that isn't that more important? So, our behavior with ourselves, with the world, will change dramatically. When this thing comes, this I gets replaced by we. Not like the editors do, you know. In the editors, when they write editorials, they assume always, we say like this, although it is I, that is just the words. But the feeling of togetherness brings about this transformation. Life becomes happier, more peaceful. And that is the journey towards the ultimate source of happiness. Yesterday, this same question was being asked to me in Connecticut. I was giving a lecture, not on this topic, but similar. So, that how do we see the transformation? Now, is there that before and after pictures? You see them, that there is somebody is selling an exercise machine. So, in the TV, you see the ads. It is shown before a plum, you know, that person, and then exercise machine, you know, and the person is shown sitting on that cycle or whatever, and then after, before and after, a slim person is shown there, that how the changes now happen, you know. So here also you can show the picture, you know, before. Before the feeling of oneness and after the feeling of oneness. That it is when we practice togetherness, not that you will become slim or anything, ego will become slim, you know. It is, and that becomes the source of happiness. Our irritation is not caused by others. It is by my ego, you know. It is that is the irritant, the irritant. Other become irritant only in the secondary sense. So, in the feeling of togetherness, this main irritant is reduced, and therefore we become happy. In fact, the facial expressions change. I have seen it in so many people. Just by practicing devotion, practicing this idea of togetherness, how the life actually gets tremendously transformed gradually. We have to be patient. Not that it is not a magic wand that and then everything will change at that moment. No, it is not like that. But as we practice and progress in that practice, there will be a steady change that can be perceived, a positive change that can be perceived in our behavior. So, Brahman and Krishna, what is the relationship between formless Brahman and with form? Vision of God, how does one understand the meaning? A very good question, but I don't know if we have time to, let me try to be as brief as possible. The formless and with form. Sri Ramakrishna gave a very nice answer to it, that like water has no form, but when in the cold it becomes ice. Now ice has formed. Is ice and water, are they different really? Content-wise, they are same. So, the same reality is with form and without form. There is no or there. Whether it is formless or with form, this conflict is not there. It is with form and without form. Both are there. It is not that you have to take one and leave other. It is God is with form, which does not mean God is not without form. God is with form and God is without form. Whatever way you want to look at that. So, Krishna and Brahman are the same. Therefore, Krishna is addressed as Brahma. That it is Rama, Krishna. We sing Ram Nam here, you know. So every Ekadashi day or whatever, how do we chant that? What is the refrain? Shuddha Brahma Parat Pararam. Shuddha Brahma Parat Pararam. That is Rama. And then Kalatmaka Parameshwara Ram. Kala, the time, is the first manifestation of differentiation. That everything is divided by time, space. That continuum of time and space makes all the differences. So, that is the first manifestation, Kalatmaka Parameshwara. And then the form in the ethereal state that is being shown, Sheshatalpa Sukhanidritaram, that it is that Rama who is lying, relaxing on the bed of what? Bought here from some bed stores? No. It is the bed of a terrible snake, Shesha. So it is, and then Brahmadya Amara Prarthita Ram. That very Ram, see the Ram is, all this is Ram. Not that one is Brahman and another is Ram. See, that Brahman Ram, that time Ram. Then this relaxing on the Shesha, that is Rama. And then all these devas, the angels, they prayed to him to come in the human form. So he comes in the clan of Dashratha, and so that is also Rama. So that is how this Krishna, same thing with Krishna, that it is with form, without form. That is, all of us are Brahman. Everything is Brahman. And yet, it is different. It is, that difference does not hurt in any way the oneness or the formlessness of the divine. It is our basic mistake in thinking that it is either A or not A. This is the basis of our logic. And therefore it can never get to the truth. Therefore all our, this is actually topic for tomorrow, that it is, but this is the basic flaw in our logic. That we always think A or not A. A and not A cannot be true. It has to be A or not A. In the basic lessons in mathematical logic, it is taught that either A or not A. But that is because our thinking has this flaw. We do not see A and not A as together. The God is both A and not A. The reality is both A and not A. And therefore, well, this is a corollary of that. The mathematics or this physical science can never find it, because the basic premise is A or not A, not A and not A. So, we will get the chance to discuss it more tomorrow. Vision of God, how does one understand the meaning? Again, vision is here not referred to our eyes. Let me quote from Meister Eckhart here, a wonderful statement. He says, we cannot see God with these eyes. We can see God with the eyes by which God sees us. We need those eyes, the eyes that God sees us. With that, with those eyes, we can see God. So, that is the vision. It is when there is no really description for that, except what I can suggest. You know, read the accounts of the visions of Sri Ramakrishna. In fact, Yogeshananji has written a very nice book, Visions of Sri Ramakrishna. So that book will help to clarify this question. From mom's point of view, I would like to know why my child is not settling down and getting what? Old. What is God's play here? Thank you. Well, it is the God's play is God's play. The mom has to do a mom's duties. God will see. God is our supreme father and mother. Do we not understand this? We chant all the time. Tvameva mata cha pita tvameva. So don't think that as mother. I am the mother, and so I have to keep on worrying. And that is the problem with mothers, you know. It hurts them, and it hurts the children too. It is, if they stop worrying, probably the children will improve. It is, why do we not see this? It is, I understand, because of our attachments and all, it is rather difficult. But again, truth is truth. God is our father, mother, all, you know, that is. And so, Sri Ramakrishna used to tell that, think of your child as, you know, you are like a nanny to the child. And not really, what is, God is the mother. You were just a secondary instrument. You have no credit in that and no blame either. If some author writes an article with the pen does not get a reward for writing such a great article, nor the criticism of that, it is a foolish article and all that, but pen doesn't get it. Because the pen was just a secondary instrument. So, the human parents, they are just secondary instruments. They do not know what something they were doing and the child got born, you know. That is not that they had that any role to play in it particularly. It is only a secondary role. And so, the primary, the one who is the real parent, let that parent take care of it. It is to your duty. And that is how the things will improve. At least, you know, you will send the right message to the child that the parents, they impose their ideas, their morals, their way of thinking on the children. Forgetting that, well, that is a different being, has a different idea of growth, different dreams, different plans. And so, let us think of this, that after all, he or she is God's child, and that child, that parent will take proper care of it. This is the truth, friends. I understand that it is because of our attachment to body, we are not able to see this. That is why we say, in the Christendom it is said that Jesus is the only Son of God. Why only? Are we not all children of God? We are. The speciality of Jesus is that he knew it. We don't know it. We call somebody my father, my mother, my so-and-so. Jesus didn't say that carpenter is my father. God. So that is why he is the Son of God. We also, the moment we know this, we will also have the same right to say, I am Son of God. Because that is the truth. It is, when we open our eyes to truth, we know it, that's all. So this is the only thing one can do, I guess. What is quantum leap? Is it possible for an ordinary, undisciplined person? And now, and how? Yeah. Well, everything is possible, no? It may appear as a big leap, but it is possible. It is indisciplined that the person, how do that person know that I am indisciplined? Because there is the knowledge of discipline also. Otherwise, how would that person know that this is not discipline? And that, and so can become disciplined tomorrow, who knows. It is, therefore, it can change. It can change, it can turn. Let us not harbor this thought that it is, I have spent so much life being indisciplined, now how can it happen? And maybe I am, too old now to make it happen in this life. These are all really baseless ideas. I'm sorry, but I have to use the somewhat harsh word to drive home the truth that it is. These are all meaningless ideas. Sri Ramakrishna said a room was in dark for 1,000 years. Then if you light the lamp, does it take 1,000 years for the darkness to go away? It is a quantum leap. Dark and light. That's it. It is, in a class a few days back, I said, how long does it take if there is a rope lying and you are seeing a snake there, how long does it take for that snake to go away and rope to come there? Well, and a little child was in the class, like that child sitting there, and he said from the back, actually shouted, in a blink of eye, in a blink of eye, It is, that is how it will happen. There is, this is how it appears like quantum leap, but that is how it is. Everybody is ordinary, indisciplined person. Everybody. But that is not that the saints are not that those fall from the skies. They also were ordinary. When they saw the truth, they became extraordinary. That's all. Otherwise, we are all ordinary. And there is no other definition of being ordinary. And that is how it happens. There is no rhyme and reason. Pray. Make your efforts. The question shows that you want to do that. That is why the question is how. How do you make this curry? Because I want to make it so that, therefore I am asking how it gets made. So, one wants to take that quantum leap, and therefore this question, how? And this is the only answer to that. Show the intent, make the prayers, make the attempt, and things will, they will fall in place. Could you please briefly discuss responsibility in daily life, not to give up in any endeavor? Well, responsibility in daily life, whatever I see as my doing, it is I am responsible for that. That is my responsibility. Wherever that ego has confirmed that I and that thing are connected, I am responsible for that. And so that I have to discharge that responsibility. One cannot be irresponsible about it, that all God does everything. God is responsible. To fix responsibility is a very tricky question, really. And not easy to fix responsibility in a mundane way. Except internally you can fix it. There is a wonderful book by a philosopher, A.J. Ayer. He was a kind of agnostic philosopher. And one of his contention was, and he has very nicely demonstrated it, that you can never fix responsibility of any action, really. Because to prove it is well nigh impossible. You may say that this man murdered that man. And so this fellow is responsible and should be well punished for it. But somebody may say, actually, had there been no gun, this fellow wouldn't have been able to kill. So they... gun is responsible for that. And so who made the gun? That inventor is responsible. Somebody may say, but without that, gunpowder, that ammunition, how can that, so that the one who made the ammunition should be, and the one therefore who did all the chemistry of it, that should be considered responsible. So you can never really fix who is responsible for that. So, in an empirical way, you can't fix it. But the one who did that killing knows that I did it. And that is how the responsibility is fixed. So, internally. Externally, again, then there are the courts of law and so forth. But I do it and my action, my ego catches me there. Hey, you are caught. You are caught. I am responsible for it. In daily life, what I know as my work, I am responsible for it. When I know that everything is God's work, then my responsibilities are gone. I have no responsibility in the world. Not to give up in any endeavor. Well, some endeavors, it is good that, give it up if it is... going in the wrong direction, then better not stick to it, give it up. It is, but if it is a genuine endeavor, we should stick to it, even if it is taking a lot of labor, lot of time. It is, all such good things in life come by patiently pursuing what we have been doing. running away from such thing is not the way to fulfill it. There are many more questions. We will take them up later. So, because I am looking at the clock and Atmajnananji's face is also getting a bit concerned because he has to manage things, you know. At Providence, if it happens, then I would be concerned. Responsibility, you know.